Hey everyone, thanks for listening to my podcasts here on the Hullerstubber feed. Do spread the word to other people if you think they might enjoy them. Do listen to some more if you think you might enjoy them, but do enjoy this one. I am shortly going to be on tour with my new stand-up show, Can I Have My Ball Back? Head to richardherring.com/ballback/tour for all those dates. Some of them are sold out, some of them have hardly sold anything. It would really help me if you bought tickets to the ones that aren't sold out. Either way, as soon as you can. I think it's going to be a lot of fun. It's about cancer and testicles. One of them's not funny, but one of them's really funny, and it kind of cancels out the unfunniness. I'd say just on average, slightly more funny. So I hope you'll come along. If not, keep enjoying the podcast. We'll be back in September at the Leicester Square Theatre with more live podcasts. Maybe a few Edinburgh ones before then. Sit back, relax, and enjoy this stupid podcast you've chosen to listen to.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hello, it's me, Rich Terring. Welcome to this special Hullerstubber recorded at the Henley Festival. It's very posh here, you won't believe it. Fiona Allen is coming up, it's lots of fun. We're doing lots of Hullerstubbers on the road, and I'm also all of August from the 2nd to the 25th, apart from Mondays, performing Hullerstubber at the Newtown Theatre, 1:30 p.m. every day. It's a different guest every day. Every single podcast will be released within 24 hours on the usual feed, so you'll be able to hear them all for free at home. But why not come along and listen to them? Go to richardherring.com/gigs for links, and also for the autumn tour, which is coming all over the UK. Go to rahulaspa.co.uk to become a member and provide us some money for this wonderful service so we can pay to make more podcasts. Thank you very much. Now let's sit back, relax, and enjoy Hullerstubber. Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Henley Festival. Please welcome a man who has got a massive crowd in here. You won't believe it when you hear it at home. It's Richard Herring. Thank you very much. Hello. Hello, Henley. Oh, listen to that noise. It's insane out here, I tell you. It's insane. We're at the Henley Festival. We're up against the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra and Alid Jones. Last year, I was up against Will Young, not for the first time. And it was about the same. I have to say, it was about the same number of people. So that's fine, as long as it's not less. And honestly, I can see 3 people coming in. That's almost going to double the audience. We're going to have a good time, don't worry. So welcome to another episode of Richard Herring's Lark Stretching Time podcast. You've got to come up with a new idea for podcasts, and I've changed direction a bit. Each week we're going to get a different bird and just see how far it can be stretched in quite an oblique tribute to Monty Python, which most of you are not going to get. Though I was hanging around with the emoticon who wears the sunglasses. I don't know if you know him. He calls it Hullerstubber, so I don't know if that's going to... Well, yeah, really no one knows who I am here, so it's fine. And we're in Henley-on-Thames. It's a difficult place to describe. This is an odd gig in that everybody is wearing tuxedos in the whole festival. I imagine it's like that all the time in Henley, in any case. It's not full of cunts, but it's 80%. 80%, I would say. If Waitrose became a town, it would be Henley-on-Thames. I think that's fair to say. The big news in Henley this week is the proposed new zebra crossing on Grays Road. So I know people are pro or anti that. You've got till July the 19th to register any comments with the council about it. Think it's a good idea that yeah. Oh, looking for it's good for the public school. Oh, Catholic school. Same thing. So, good for the Catholic school. Of course, the Black Death wiped out 60% of the population of Henley, which, frankly, was just not quite enough for my liking. We came so close to getting rid of all of them. But it's been a nice week for me. It's lovely to be here. And you're leaving? Oh, my God. We've lost 10% of the audience. Oh, is it too rude? I am being nice. If you think I'm going to be nice, you're really in the wrong place. Go and see Ali Jones. Though, you know, he did have that trouble, didn't he? So I'm going to be nice. I'll be lovely. I love Henley. This is about the fourth time I've been to Henley in like the last 12 months. You'd think I'd be doing better, wouldn't you? People came to see the book thing, didn't they, in the theatre? Yeah, there you go. So I love it. Thank you. It's good to see you. You might be my interviewee by the sound of it tonight. My daughter's given me an emergency question, which I might check out. My daughter's now 4 and a half, so that's sort of prime emergency question.
Can I live in Henley, Daddy?
It wasn't, can I live in Henley, Daddy? No, it wasn't that. And you might be my daughter, it's possible, if I'd had sex before I was 22. her emergency question is, what does a rainbow smell of? Quite a good question. I told her to shut up, it's made of light, it doesn't smell of anything. She's a fucking idiot. Please welcome my guest tonight. She's probably best known for being the voice of Claudia Schiffer in a TV commercial for the Citroën Zara Coupe. That's why we're all here tonight, that's what's dragged the people in. And they're all coming in, there's a lovely woman with a lovely pearl necklace. Saw you before the show. It's Fiona Allen, ladies and gentlemen. Here she is, Fiona Allen. Come on in. Welcome. Come on in. You could have dressed up, Fiona. So it's welcome to the show. You have to pick up that microphone if you want to.
I know. Thank you.
How are you doing? So were you the voice? Good. Were you the voice of Claudia Schiffer in an advert? Because it was a little bit of trivia on IMDb that you were the voice.
No, that's true. Actually, it was a little bit because I'm not supposed to say it, but I was.
Okay.
Because she's got that kind of strange supermodel accent.
Yeah.
And she couldn't pronounce a word.
Right.
Well, she could, but everyone went, what? what is she saying? And so they got me in to do
one
to
word.
Do it. Yeah.
Do that
and then they had to kind of sort of slice
what
it in.
What word couldn't she pronounce?
I can't remember now, but it was when she walked down the stairs and there was a big car. You know, it was all in gold and there was a car. And I think she had some pants that she was throwing out. Over the staircase. It was a little bit weird.
It's on the IMDb page, so, you know, it's not... The news is out there. I haven't broken
it. It was ages ago.
Yeah. I did
do that, yeah.
Yeah. Did you have to get into that role? Did you have to live as a supermodel for a few months beforehand?
I mean, I do a lot of voiceovers, so it's just, you know, you go and chat, and that was the one I had to do, just mess about and then go home. Bit of a weird job for the day, being Claudia Schiffer.
Yeah, it's exciting. Word. It was exciting. So, there's lots of exciting things to talk to you about. I did not know that you played yourself in a film because you worked at the Hacienda and you worked for Factory Records.
Yeah, that
and
was...
you played yourself in the 24-hour party people.
Yeah, I did. That's my only real job, working in a nightclub.
Right.
It's my only proper job.
Yeah. So, how old were you when you were doing that?
In my 20s, I think.
Yeah.
And it was a bit of a crazy time, that nightclub. Well, you know, Happy Mondays.
Yeah.
And all that Manchester scene, the Madchester scene. And there's all the gangsters and everything else going on. Really good fun, musically.
Yeah. Well, it was, that was the you were right at the heart of that big explosion of that scene in that then went on to be in the film. And then they got you to play yourself in the film.
Yeah, I mean,
you're just a little tiny part.
I'm not sure if it was because I was just there. but I just did that. We were just messing around, really. And Coogan was in playing Wilson, wasn't he? But I mean, it was just good fun. It was good fun. So, yeah, I did.
What were they like, the Happy Mondays in real life? What was Bez like in real life?
Oh, he's lovely, Bez.
Oh, good.
Yeah, he's really lovely. I mean, I remember he's now my husband, but it was a first date.
Bez is your husband.
No, my husband is my husband.
Okay,
Bez is not my husband.
That'd be cool. That would be a good exclusive if you had two husbands.
And I remember when I met him, and we went, like, it was one of our first dates, and we went to Ali Pali, and there was a big Manchester night going on there. And I'd really not been out with him very, you know, very, I was like, probably a couple of times anyway. So we went off there and walked up, and the first person I met was Bez. Well, you're going to get this because you obviously know who he is, and I know you don't, but I'm going to do...
It's not a very Henley story. Sorry, the people at home are loving this. We can play to the people at home.
It's not a Henley story because this is about the Happy Mondays, and Bez was the one who used to just stand there with maracas with like eyes like this. And I'd got this new boyfriend, and I was kind of trying to slightly impress him. And he walked up, and the first person that came up to me was Bez, and he went, "All right, Fee, I think I peaked too soon." It was just like tragic.
It'd be good if he was there for the rest of the date, just dancing in front of you, shaking tambourines. These things.
But they were really loads of fun, those guys.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it was just kind of like lots of parties and lots of fun, and I really liked their music, so... Yeah. Yeah, it's like a big gang, you know, really, in Manchester, that because of the Hacienda. And everyone, we'd go off to Paris for parties just for the weekend and come back. And then we'd go to Amsterdam for parties and come back. And it was just loads and loads of fun. And that was my only proper job.
It's pretty good.
Yes, yeah,
and you were presuming you were working for Tony Wilson.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Which, you know, and obviously Tony's passed away now, but he was an amazing man. Did a lot for Manchester. Really clever man. Went to Cambridge. I think he came from Salford. And he was just so pro the north of England. And he would let anybody do anything. Like you just come up with an idea and go, Tony, I've got this great idea. I did this once. I don't know why. I don't know why I did this. I've got this great idea. Why don't we just open a shop and sell all the factory stuff, you know, all that kind of factory memorabilia, because it's worldwide. People are just factory nuts, aren't they? And everything's got its own little fact number. And he went, yeah, all right then. And that was it. You'd get a shop. I said, I think factory should open, should have a men's clothing, because he was all into Paul Smith and Comme des Garçons. He was always kind of very well-dressed. And he'd go, yeah, okay then. So get a load of people sitting around saying, okay, well, let's come up with a clothing line. And, you know, he was really brilliant at just letting people come up with ideas. He was so creative. He was the worst businessman you've ever met in your life. I mean, utterly hopeless, which is why everything kind of failed that he did. It always looked nice, though.
Yeah.
Always looked great. Got Ben Kelly design Factory Records' new building, and it had the most beautiful doors with Japanese oak. They were stunning. I mean, in Manchester, that part of Manchester wasn't really that interesting. It was a little bit run down, and they got hold of this building. It was so stunning, and you get a load of Mancunians going, it's a really nice door. Really nice door. Japanese oak, really nice door. Couldn't afford it.
But there should be more business people like that. I mean, that's sort of what the ethos of Go Faster Stripe, who are behind this. Chris Evans, not that one, who runs this. He just likes to spend, he makes some money and he'll spend it on something. I mean, just making more stupid comedy, he'll do, not doors, but if you give him enough.
But they do anything. I mean, you know,
that's good.
Even the accountant at factory would be going, I'd want to go off somewhere, and I'd go, can I borrow your car? And I was a kid, really, and had this really nice Merc. He'd go, yeah, it's all right. Just borrow his car, whiz off and come back again. It was totally full of free spirits. Lovely, lovely time. Lots of fun.
And so you went to convent school, is that right?
I did.
It's been quite difficult to find. There's very few interviews with you, Fiona. You're a very private individual. This is your first podcast you've ever appeared on.
It is. No, it's true, actually. I don't really... I like you, Richard, even though you wore a suit tonight, which annoyed me. I was really smart, and I'm just going to tell you this. I was really smart before I came out, and I had a beautiful black velvet jacket, and I was really, really... I thought, Jesus, it's Richard. He'll be really scruffy. And I just got changed.
I just have so much respect for the people of Henley that I thought I should dress up for this audio podcast.
Yeah.
I've worn this suit so far for Kay Mellor and for you. It's because
lovely suit.
It's for the classy ladies I want to impress. That's why I wear this.
Yeah.
Good.
So, well, I did. I went to a convent grammar school.
Yeah.
Taught by Irish nuns all my life, really.
Yes.
It's obviously a very repressed teenager. Right. I could write about it in Latin, which is fine. My misery. Yeah. And the Irish nuns were lovely. You know, that lovely lilting, softly, kindly accent where they'd tell me I'd burn in hell. And then off you go, you're a lovely girl. But you'll be dying in pain in all eternity. Yeah, that would be, that was lovely. Lovely schooling.
Yeah.
It's good fun.
It's quite a weird... Was that... Where was that in... You were born
Lancashire.
In Lancashire.
Yeah. Yeah. Because I'm half Spanish, so I've got a Spanish Catholic mum.
Right, okay.
And so, obviously, you know, we have to... We'd have to go to Catholic schools. And even, you know, if I'd wake up at night... I remember them actually having a little bit of a... Not an argument, but they were talking about... My tooth had come out. And my mum, okay, my mum, she talks like this. So my mum and dad, they've been married for years and years. He still can't pronounce the name properly, by the way. Yeah, this is my dad introducing my mum to someone. This is my wife. but my mum was there, you know, and he was trying to leave me 50p for the tooth fairy.
Right.
But in Spain, there isn't a fairy. Right. It's a little mouse called Ratón. And I woke up to them having a little chat. It's a furry. It's a mouse. It's a furry. It's a mouse. It's a furry. It's a mouse. I kind of woke up. My mum went, oh, Fiona, we woke you up. I'm terribly sorry. You turn and look at baby Jesus and go to sleep. And I turn and look at all the... We had religious artefacts all around the house and baby Jesus was there like this. You know... Nails in his feet.
Baby Jesus was
and that's
there.
That's what I mean. Yeah. That was her, little baby Jesus. And baby Jesus wasn't on the cross. Like, okay, I won't have any nightmares.
So, can't have the middle man, you know, you might as well. He was destined to die, wasn't he? So you might as well get it over with. Well, they should have strung him up straight away. That's what Herod was trying to do. Not crucify him.
That's true. So, yeah, I mean, that was very Catholic, very, very Catholic upbringing. And so we'd, you know, obviously you'd think, well, you know, you can look forward to your summer holidays.
Yeah.
We'd pack our suitcases and go to the airport to go and stay with my dad who worked in Saudi Arabia. So we'd stay there for the summer.
Right.
Lots to do.
Were you rebellious in the convent school or were you a good pupil?
I was really naughty. Yeah, really, really naughty. But cheeky naughty,
yeah.
You know. A likeable rogue,
okay.
They used to describe me as. You're a likeable rogue, Fiona Allen, but you don't listen. And I would turn all the religious paintings upside down and skedaddle off and, you know, just escape over the wall and go and get lollies for everybody. I got lollies for everybody.
Was it? Did
Let
you
them
have,
eat cake.
Did you have to stay? Were you boarding at the school, or was it?
No, it was an ex-boarding school.
Okay.
And I was meant to go to boarding school,
yeah.
Especially when my dad was in Saudi, because yeah. Everybody went to boarding school. The kids of the other people that worked there.
Yeah.
But right at the last minute, my mum, you know, little Spanish mum, they don't do that. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So she sort of stopped it just at the last minute.
Okay.
But one of my friends who was a boarder and actually at the same compound in Saudi said to me. You would have just been expelled anyway. So, forget it.
Yeah. It's kind of, I was talking to Caroline Quentin in a podcast that will actually go out after this one, who was at a boarding school.
Mm.
But I've been reading Robin Ince's book about why people become comedians and having, you know, trauma in their childhood. It's often like being adopted or losing a parent or things like going to boarding school.
Mm.
Do you think a convent school brought out the comedian in you, or do you think you were...
Well, I think so, because if anybody is Catholic, I mean, but seriously Catholic, you know, remembering when we were like 7 or 8, you take your first Holy Communion, you've got to dress up like you're about to get married. You're in a full wedding dress with a veil. I mean, it's nuts if you think about it.
Yeah.
And you go in and go, you've got to go and tell that man who's behind a piece of wood all your things that you've lied about. I mean, on a little kid, I used to have to make up my lies because I didn't know what to say,
yeah.
Which is weird. So,
so that was the lie. You could have said this whole confession has been a lie.
I mean,
I've been really good.
Yeah.
I know Jesus died for my sins, but I haven't done any, and I resent him for dying for my sins when I wasn't planning to do any. To be honest,
I know, but that's the thing. I'd be in trouble for not saying stuff, right. So I had to make it up. I mean, it's just, you know, a religious, and it's kind of quite oppressive. So I think, you know, that does make you, you know,
yeah. Well, if you want to send kids to Catholic school, there's a good one here, and it's going to have a zebra crossing outside it, so that's going to be road safety.
I heard, yeah, okay.
So there's at least one Catholic in the audience tonight. good to see him still around. And good to see that it's still going after all this time. Just think about it for a second. And I'm going to talk about your granddad. You don't have to answer if you don't want to, but your granddad was a hangman. Harry Allen, he's famous.
Yep, you can't choose your family. Don't know what to say about that. You lot probably had your grandparents reading you Goldilocks and the Three Bears and Heidi, I'm telling me about her killing a Nazi or something. But yeah.
Well, that's all right. It's all right.
No, I really did. Killing it's a very Nazi, strange. Right. This is where it explains why I do comedy.
Yeah, there may be. Yeah,
dig slightly. I wasn't actually going to mention that. It's a bit of a fill the party mode, but I don't know what to say about that. That's true. He did do that as a job.
Yeah, it's a job that needed doing.
Yeah, and he didn't make the decision. No. And the judge did, but doesn't make it any better. I've tried to convince myself. It's all right, he didn't really... It's not good, is it? No.
It was an interesting... I don't know that you can judge him for it exactly. It's an interesting slice of our history that was a job in that generation. It's no longer a job, obviously.
There's a lot of stuff there that you don't know about, though.
Yeah.
Top secret, and it all goes under there, because there's a lot going on that we didn't know about, and I don't think they'll ever let us know.
Okay.
At the end of the war.
Did your granddad tell you any of that, and can you tell me what it was now?
He did.
Okay.
And no, I can't. But it's fascinating, really. But God, thank God it doesn't happen anymore. So...
If you had to hang someone...
Richard Herring, stop! Stop!
If you had to, would you give it a go? Would you think you could give it a crack? It's in the genes, isn't it? It's got to be there.
Do you know what? He puts one suit on and thinks, geez, I genuinely couldn't. I couldn't, honestly.
What if they were a Nazi and they'd been really bad?
Right, you know what? No means no.
I think it's very interesting.
Yeah.
It was an interesting...
It's bizarre.
Yeah, it's that social history in the social history sense. I understand it's a different thing if it's connected to you. If you knew you died in 92 or something like that, was it?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you knew him pretty well.
Yeah, I did.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I knew about it. It's just one of those things that, you know, people would think was a little bit weird, but you can't do anything about it, can I? I mean, you know, I can't change it. I can't change it.
If you could change... No, I won't. What colour...
Well, I'd rather he was a juggler. I mean, you know, if I could...
What,
to be fair, a baker, maybe, or something.
What do you think rainbows smell of?
I think they smell of sweet shops.
Yeah, I'm for sure, but...
Yeah.
Actually, when my daughter asks.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think we might be right. Yeah. We were making rainbows...
How are we going to know?
Well, it's hard, isn't it? We were making rainbows on the floor through the reflectors on her bike, and they were coming up on the carpet. They're not real rainbows, are they? You can't sniff them. And you can't go and sniff an actual rainbow, can you? They always move away from you.
Just lie. Pretend you have.
Yeah. I think it's a good question. They probably do smell
of
something.
Just
because we can't smell
it
doesn't mean they don't smell as well. You know, you're living in a human-centric world where you think, oh, I can't smell light. But if you had the capacity to smell light, you might find out what it smelled like, and it probably smells of poo or something. It's my guess. Probably is. It's travelled a long way. It's been alive for a long time, isn't it? It's good. Does it really is me saying that light smells of poo the worst thing you've heard already this evening? Oh, how dare you say light smells of poo? No, he's having to go at light now. It was all right when he was having to go at Henley, but when he started actually mocking light, what if all the light decides to go from Henley as a result of this? Be good. You are married to Michael Parkinson. That's an interesting...
Junior.
Ah, that's not as good.
Yeah, not him.
That's not as good.
Son of.
I'd like you and Parky. I've been compared to Michael Parkinson... favourably. I mean, I think he's the king of the chat show, but
he's not bad, is he?
But yeah, he's because of the long form basis of this interview, he didn't ask people if rainbows had a smell or if they would hang people if they got the chance.
Nope, he
but
didn't.
Apart from that, I'm quite like him, I think. What do you reckon?
I think that's lovely that you think that, Richard.
I'm from Yorkshire. He's from Yorkshire. He's a Yorkshireman.
Are you from Yorkshire? I didn't know that. Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Never mind.
And I talk to people in a long form interview, so we're the same.
Okay, that's good. You are.
You're married to his son, Michael Parkinson.
Yes.
Well, if you had a son, would you call him the same as, or a daughter, would you call them the same? I mean, I know you have got both of those things.
There's a Michael tucked in there with my son.
Is there? Yeah.
But it's in the middle.
It's in the middle. That's allowed.
But people used to do that then. They would talk, they'd call their son, there's probably people in the audience you've got. A son
weird.
With the same name, or yeah, no, people
weird.
Used to do that. It's kind of quite a normal thing, I think.
Well, like
I don't think people do
kings
it now,
did
but
it.
I think, huh?
Kings often did it, and it was King Henry the First, King Henry the Second.
Maybe he thinks he's a king.
King
Just bring him up and ask.
There were a load of King Georges in a row, weren't they? Probably all father and son. It's arrogant, Michael Parkinson. I've gone off. And, I don't blame your husband. It's not his fault. He had no choice in the matter. He had to go along with it. But if you see Michael Parkinson, tell him I'm angry with him about that.
Okay, I will.
Oh, don't, because I want to try and get him on as a guest.
No, I will.
I'm going to try and get him on as a guest.
I definitely will.
Then I'm going to tell him. Once he's on the first thing, I'm going to know, I think you are the worst person on earth for calling,
your son the same name. I do actually think it's something that people just used to do then.
Yeah, I think it's nice, really. I'm only joking. Yeah. When my wife was asked, I couldn't take any of the naming stuff seriously, so I always came up with joke names. But I was keen to name both. Well, I think I've done it before, but anything with red for herring. So red herring, scarlet herring, ruby herring, Rufus herring means red-haired one. I nearly got that one through because she didn't know that Rufus meant red-haired one. She liked Rufus. My son was very nearly Rufus until I did admit that that was the reason I'd done it. And Richard, I just thought, I was saying, can we just call them both Richard Herring?
Or even the little girl.
Yeah, the girl, she was first Richard Herring. Richard Herring Jr., Richard Herring the second.
I like that.
Yeah. Call all your kids your own name.
Little Richard Herrings all trying to smell rainbows. Yeah. Oh, your house.
Oh, smelling rainbows. Idiot.
Sweet.
Idiot. You went to drama school.
Yeah, kind of.
Right.
I did 2 years of drama.
Yeah, that's going to drama school.
But I realised quite quickly that I, wasn't that particularly interested in doing Greek theatre or the classics or anything like that. And I sort of really loved comedy, but it wasn't that kind of drama school. I'm probably the only person who was into comedy.
Right.
So it was full-on kind of West End twirlies, as I call them.
Right.
And I shouldn't have said that.
See, I told you to say things you shouldn't say. That's all right. I think that's affectionate.
Yeah.
West End twirlies, that's nice.
Yeah.
Dancers, musicals.
But I wasn't really into that.
No.
So, and also, because I'm Northern, there was a teacher there, and it's happened to me a couple of times, actually, where somebody said, you really got to learn to speak properly. And I went, but I do lots of characters, lots of accents, lots of voices. I don't want to change my accent. I'm quite happy with a Northern accent. I don't really care.
Most people in Henley don't agree with that one person applauding.
I know.
Friend. I don't understand. Why would anyone want to have a Northern accent? Surely it's something we impose on them.
And I just stuck to my guns because actually I did my first sketch show. I did so many different characters and voices, and I remember meeting somebody for a job and they said, where do you actually come from? Because it doesn't really matter.
Yeah.
But unfortunately, it still does, I think, now.
Yeah.
Still, I think it matters. You know, if you sound Northern.
That's a shame and sad to think. Well, acting's changed a lot in that way that... and I've had a few acts on the podcast to discuss this, but it has become more of an upper-class profession, hasn't it? Just in that it's difficult to get started. So if you come from independent wealth and Eton... That these people voted Boris Johnson in as an MP, It's their fault. What's happening? What I'm going to guess has happened. It hasn't happened yet, but Boris Johnson, Prime Minister.
I don't mind all those schools.
Yeah.
I actually genuinely know people at those schools. All those sort of lovely schools around, and I know a football coach at Eton. I know kids that go to Eton, and a lot of these schools around these areas. And actually, they're kind of different now. They're changed.
Yeah.
And I'm very much, I think, probably one of the only people on the circuit who isn't like posh bash. I actually don't think there's anything wrong with having an education, and I just think
But then if you live in a society where that's fine, and I agree that like if people are paying for education, you sort of expect to get something back for that. If you were going to any other thing in the world, you said I've paid extra for this, but you get the same. No, that's not what I've paid extra for. But I think when it means in something like acting, if it means that working class actors or people from different parts of the country are unable to get the work because they can't afford to,
I understand in that sense. But the one thing that's lovely about stand up, which I've just been gone back to the last 3 months. Is amazing. There's loads of women out there doing stuff. It doesn't matter. There's loads of different people. There's a little old lady, an American lady. She's about 85. She's a bit like Joan Rivers. She's really rude. She's hilarious. And, there's people from all over Europe, different cultures, different accents, different ages, everything. And you've really got a voice there. And it doesn't matter, what you are, where you come from, what your education is. At all, so there's still that freedom there. At least, I think what you're talking about is absolutely right.
Yeah.
When you go into perhaps filming and
But even a little bit with comedy, I think it's gone over into, because you sort of have to move to a big city to do it really effectively. So you have to be, you know, if you move to London, you have to be able to afford to live in London. And there's so many comedians now, it's actually quite hard to break through and make a living at it. You know, I don't think I'd be successful now if I started now. Thank God I started when no one was really
there's quite a job. There was quite a few comics now that, and they do, they have day jobs as well. You know, the young ones that are starting out. And they find it quite tough. It's difficult for most people in London anyway, living, I think.
So when you did stand-up the first time, how long did you do stand-up for when you were starting out? Were you just doing open spots or were you...
I did open spots, but to be honest, I got busy doing telly before I was doing stand-up. And I remember a comic saying, why are you doing stand-up? Because you're on telly already. We're doing it to do what you do. To get to where you are. And I went, oh, it's just because I'm sort of new here. I don't really know anybody. I did stand up just to sort of make friends. I didn't really know many people.
And were you doing characters or were you being Fiona Allen, observations or...?
Observations, but going into characters. So I'm doing voices when there's a reason for it. Like, I do that now and I've come back to it now. But obviously it's, you know, I do quite a bit more minutage. But, I listen to everybody and just, you know, basically take the pee. And any characters I can put in there, not for the sake of it. If I'm saying something, there's a reason for it, then I will. That's what happened, and that's what. But I had to stop doing it because I got very busy doing telly, and I was doing that job as well, and I was doing voiceovers, and I suddenly had 3 kids under 5, and something had to. I had to give up one of those jobs. And if you were me and you had little kids like that, I think the stand-up would have to go because I'd only just sort of started it and it was at night. I just couldn't fit everything in.
It's very difficult to do three. I've got 2 kids and that's very hard. So you're doing the stand-up after all the Smack the Pony? Was it after Smack the Pony?
I did little bits just before. And then I was doing it, after I was kind of... messing around with that, and it just got too much.
So,
the only reason I've come back to it now is because I've got teenagers, and I was saying to Richard, I'm so fed up of my teenagers. They don't do anything. And about 3 months ago, I was like, do you know what? I had to give them money to empty the dishwasher. And I just said, I've just so had enough. I am going to leave you to it. You can make your own tea. And they went, where are you going? And I said, I'm just going into Soho and I'm just the West End and I'm going to do some stand-up. And they went, are you kidding? I went, no, make your own dinner. And I shut the door and I went. And we're just standing
and
there.
And they haven't been back since?
No, not kind of not. No. So that was about 3 months ago. I'm having loads of fun, though.
Yeah.
It's really good fun.
I think it's great to come back to. I was saying to you backstage that I sort of did it in the early 90s and then gave up. I sort of had a block on it and I didn't want to do it anymore, and then I came back sort of 14 years later and started again. And I think it's good to have a bit of life experience under your belt, but I think it's good to have had that time to do other stuff and to have had a life. But it's interesting to come back. Someone like David Deal, he didn't take a lot of time off, but he didn't do stand-up for a long time, and then he's come back with these real powerhouse amazing shows. And he was always a good stand-up.
Yes.
But his last the two I've seen, there's a new one coming out, just incredibly good, detailed, fantastic stand-up shows. It's good, I think, to take a bit of time away from something.
I agree, and I think it's one of those things, though. I'm not knocking like a 20-year-old doing stand-up at all.
No.
But it's kids messing about.
Yeah.
I think you've got so much more to say when as you've said, you've been through stuff and you've grown up a little bit and you've seen lots of things have happened to you. We all go through things. You get married, you might have kids, you know, there's all sorts of, there's loads of stuff to talk about. I couldn't talk about before. No. I was just sort of a daft kid having a mess about, really. It was still great, but I'm enjoying it much more this time.
Sure.
I don't care this time.
Yeah, but that was the same for me. I don't care. The first time I was worried about what I'd do to get work and whether people would like it. And when I came back, I just did what I wanted to do, which is why my slightly unusual show, Someone Likes Yogurt, was the way it was. And then I did a 40-minute routine about buying yogurts from a supermarket.
But
that was it. That came up from doing clubs and doing like really, you know, the stuff that I thought was funny rather than the stuff that I thought would get me work. But if it's funny, it then does get you work. I was on a podcast called Inside the Comedian, which is sort of parody of what I'm doing now. in that it's a, you sort of pretend you're pretending to have a different career, and you're being interviewed by David Reed, who's very funny. But we were talking about that. When you start as a comedian, being 20, the sort of arrogance, really, the sort of confidence you need to go on stage and think what I'm saying is interesting and funny enough for people to pay me. And you sort of do have that confidence at 20.
Definitely,
to do that.
Because
and that's amazing. You know, so I think it's also interesting to not have to go on and go, well, is what I'm saying interesting enough for people to pay me? And have a bit of self-doubt about it. But I mean, I think I did doubt when I was 20 that it was funny, but also I had the confidence to keep on going back and doing it.
I just I don't know whether I was just kind of a bit hopeless really about it. I didn't really overthink it. I just went out and did it, and if people were laughing and it was going really well, I was thinking, oh, I'm really enjoying this. It's so much fun.
Yeah.
And then I just go, oh, I want to do some more of that.
Yeah.
So that's the simple.
No, that's
and the thing is, you've got to go and be that, have that confidence and put yourself out there, because otherwise you can't move forward. You've got to start somewhere.
Yeah.
And my thing about comedy, though, is, I mean, somebody said it to me once and I was just thought, oh, please, you know, this is just looking too deeply into it. But it's about the truth of it. And it's always, I totally agree with that now. I didn't get that. Because I was doing stuff just to be funny in the beginning. Now I do things which I really mean it. And if I'm taking the piss out of something, it's because I really mean it.
Yeah,
and
same with me, Henley.
and I think you know that it's much more it's sort of more satisfying to go on stage. You know, when you really, really, genuinely can't wait to say that.
Yeah. Yeah,
that's so much more fun, and I'm not in the slightest an offensive comic. I don't even pretty much swear in it. I'm not sort of anti-man or anything like that. It's just genuinely stuff. It sounds really boring now. No, it's just stuff that comes my way that I feel like I've got something to say, and things that irritate me.
But I think it's also, I think that's really interesting when someone is a success, you know, has become that TV success and done lots of comedy on TV and acting on TV, and then to decide to come back to stand-up, which some people do view as the way to get to those things. So like you're saying, that other comedians were saying that to you, the real comedians get it and then come back or stay being stand-ups, you know. And so it's about wanting to be a stand-up.
And I think
it's
so.
It's the freedom of stand-up, but it's also, that's interesting. You're very successful in your own right. You don't need to come back to stand-up, but you've chosen to come back to stand-up because you have that urge to do
it. Yeah, and it's just so much fun to do.
Yeah.
I absolutely, totally enjoy it. I travel about moving from club to club. There's so many interesting people. And you never know. Each night is different. You don't know who's going to say what. It's great fun. I mean, some people kind of don't understand why you would do it or how you would do it or how can you just go and talk to complete strangers. And it's no different than talking to somebody on a checkout in the supermarket to me.
These people don't do that.
I know. These no, they do. Don't. They go they to don't. Waitrose.
They don't. They have automated.
I live near you, like you know. I live.
Yeah,
about 50.
She lives in Bray, so I've had all the background.
I know Bray Village. Is people actually say, "Are you married or do you live in Bray?" That's what they say. It's such a peculiar little place. It's men in red trousers that read.
There's
the Daily
a lot of
Mail.
Nice restaurants. There's a lot of there's
some lovely restaurants. Very nice.
Good.
But yeah, a lot of Daily Mail readers.
Yeah. There might be some in Henley, I don't know.
Oh, never.
I'm not sure.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Hey, everyone. I'm Craig Robinson, co-host of the Ways to Win podcast, alongside my good friend John Calipari. I've been on the go recently. Phoenix, Kansas City, Chicago. If you're like me and have a home but aren't always at home, you have an Airbnb. Hosting your home or a spare room is a very practical side hustle. If you live in a big game town, you can Airbnb your place for fans to stay in. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
I've got a new emergency question that I thought up this morning in the shower.
Oh.
I was nude when I came up with this. The reason I was in the shower, the reason I've come up with this question, I was in the shower this morning and the shower was filling up a bit in the base and I had to pull out the plug bit of the shower, and there was a lot of hair in the trap of the shower. You know what I'm talking about, right? And with you guys, well, maybe you do, because, you know, it's coming.
Okay, so where are you going with this question?
And I had to take out all this hair, long hair, from my wife and myself, and it's full of gunk and it's pretty disgusting. I still quite like doing that job. I quite enjoy it.
Do you know, blokes, the older I get, blokes get weirder. There's something weirder.
So
weirder.
I was going to ask you, what is the most disgusting household chore that you secretly quite enjoy doing?
Oh, no, I don't enjoy that. I would just put Mr. Muscle down there. Disgusting household chore that I don't mind doing?
Like...
None.
Really?
No, none. I don't like... No, I'm a neat freak, though. I drive everybody mad.
Right.
Yeah, total neat freak. I've got a white gloss kitchen. I don't
like. You hate dirt,
yeah, but
so
not,
much.
I do, but it's not like horrible stuff.
No.
But I can't
Dirt's horrible.
Tolerate.
Dirt and germs are horrible.
I haven't got any.
No,
I just haven't got any. So yeah, I can't live with.
What about
mess.
Insects getting into the house? Do you get a lot of flies coming into the house? Does that drive you nuts?
Yes.
Or do you enjoy murdering them?
Yes, it does. Drive
like
me
your,
nuts.
Like, and that takes us back to
I
your
remember,
hangman grandfather.
Well, because, yeah, I know. Yeah, that was seamless. Because my mum had a thing about flies. And, you know, if you go to Spain, they all have those funny little things on the doors, don't they? That sort of hanging out and stop the flies. Oh, yes. And I used to always run through it and get them wrapped around my neck, which I know you'll find quite funny, and go back like a Scooby-Doo. Little cartoon.
It's probably why you're a clean freak now, if you've been through that experience.
Probably. Oh, my mum was, totally.
Yeah.
Yeah, you could, you know, it was immaculate, always, our house, and I that's how I kind of like mine.
Okay.
But I got a cockapoo, so it's all going really badly wrong.
Okay.
Yeah.
Is that a kind of a weird poo that you do? Oh, the dog. The dog cockapoo.
Yes, you know
I've got
it
a
is.
Cockapoo. Good. That's my new emergency question. That's just for you, Henley, that one. Might never use it again, but I might do. I have to admit that I enjoy taking it. It was at the end of the shower. I took it out, and you get sort of dirty again taking the stuff out. There was so much in there.
We've got any therapists?
So much in there.
In the audience.
And it's slightly difficult. You have to tease it out, the one I've got. It's not. Some of them are like a proper thing. You just pick it out and do that. You have to tease it out, pull it out. There's all this hair. And in a way, isn't it beautiful, romantic? It's the hair of me and my wife.
No, nothing. There's nothing romantic about that story. And I feel like I need to tell you the truth.
Yeah.
Nothing.
I could make it into a little merkin, wear it around.
You could.
Yeah.
You see? Yeah.
What's slick about that? It's my own hair and my wife's hair. Some of it will be pubic hair. Sorry, this is the way I am. Let's try you on a tried and tested emergency question.
Uh-oh.
Well, some of them might not be, because I had to write loads of these. Here's one about hair that you might like. I like your hair. This is for dating. This is a question for dating. That's a good tip. Just say I like fellas. That's a good tip if you're dating. I like your hair. But what was your most disastrous haircut? Warning, don't say the first bit to a bald person, or probably the second bit. That's a little dating tip. What's the most disastrous haircut you've had?
I think half of it was short.
Okay.
And the other half, you know that.
Yeah. Was this the Hacienda times? Was this back?
Yeah, it was before then.
Was it? Yeah. Philoki inspired.
Yeah. I loved him.
Yeah.
I did slightly love him, yeah.
He's great. He's very very beautiful, sort of, what's the word?
But when you're teenagers, you like really stupid pop stars, don't you? All he did was... Do you remember Philoki? All he did was this. That's all he did. And I fell in love with him because he flicked his hair.
He was nice. He had something for everyone. He had something for everyone there. He was a very...
Yeah.
And then the long hair and the short hair, you know, he could do that. He could be a man, he could be a lady. It was beautiful. I loved him too.
He was all man, Richard Herring.
I liked the lead singer of Sweet, Brian Connolly. That was my favourite one. He was my first crush.
Ah. interesting.
Not Brian Connolly. No, Brian Connolly. He was Taggart's stepbrother. He was. They both died of alcohol. I don't think they grew up together, but they were Brian Connolly and Taggart. Not the character, the guy who played him.
And you're both going to cheer us up now, yeah, by saying they both died.
They both died about being alcoholics. Yeah. So there you go. There's a fact for you today. This is a question for dating. If I was dating you, if we were on a date, this is a question I'd ask you.
I may have left after the plug hole thing.
You might have, not one of my dating questions. That's one of my...
Do you know, I think over dinner you would say that.
I probably would, but it's
wouldn't
a good
he?
Test.
I think so.
It's a good test to see whether I've found the right person. Actually, my wife would hate that question. If I'd asked my wife that on the first date, I wouldn't be married to my wife. She wouldn't. She probably doesn't like me talking about her hair coming out of her plug hole. Hope she doesn't listen to this one. This is a question for dating. Isn't it best just to get the sex out of the way as soon as possible in a relationship to discover if there's anything more than physical attraction going on? Worth a try is what I say. It's worth a try. I think that's quite a good first date question.
Would you actually ask that question?
I think I might. Well, I'm not in the position to date anyone anymore. But we know
you're covering yourself.
I've got a wife.
So scared in case your wife listens.
I've got a wife.
I'm not in a position to do that, and I just made it up.
I would if I was single, and I might. I think that kind of bluntness and honesty is quite a good.
See, bluntness and honesty is great, but that does not come across as blunt honesty. That just means you just want. I think it's an interesting person who you fancy.
Because you're allowed to say no, and then I go, yes, I agree with you. I don't think we should stray, but we could, though. let's do it anyway.
Yeah.
I think from my dating experience long before I met my wife, I've written a book about it, so it's fine, she's aware. I would say it's not a bad idea. Then sometimes, like, stringing it out. If you, just give
I'd,
it a go.
I don't
give it a go.
So.
See if I come back.
I'd rather get to know somebody a bit because otherwise, you can really like somebody and then go off them really, really quickly, and you don't want to. Not you. She's not doing that to you. No. Right. And then I think you would be stuck then, wouldn't you? It's a bit awkward.
Okay. You might be right.
I might be wrong.
Yeah, you might be wrong. I waited quite with my wife. I waited quite a long time before I was.
It's because she just didn't like you, did
well,
she?
Well, she was going out with someone else. To be fair, so it's
see.
That helps. But for it to work out, you're probably right. Probably wait a bit
because we've all got boyfriends.
Yeah.
Girlfriends. Love it. Who you go? You look back and you go, God, how did I go out with him?
Yeah.
Really? How could I have gone out with him? And that's the kind of thing you want to avoid.
Yeah.
And that's somebody you think you like.
I went through a period where I went out with about two or three quite nightmare people who happened to be actresses. And I'm very glad that I had those relationships, especially the less famous one, so it's not the one you're thinking of. It was a terrible relationship, and it actually made me realise that I shouldn't be putting up with that kind of shit. And I think if I hadn't gone through that relationship, I would have carried on putting on with that kind of shit that I put up with from her for quite a long time. She was a nightmare. So I think it's good to go through that and work out what you don't want as well as what you do want. I think the problem in our country is we don't date enough people.
I think that's probably right, but I grew up with, like I said, taught by nuns, convent grammars, all girls school, and one of three sisters with a Spanish Catholic mum. I wasn't exactly encouraged to go out and date lots of different boys, which I would definitely say to my kids, you go out with different people and don't think you've got to be really serious about anything, and you just have fun and have a nice time, and just as long as they go out with really lovely people, hopefully.
Yeah, no, I agree. I'm having so much fun. Oh, fuck me. We've been talking for ages.
Have we?
Yeah. I haven't. I've got proper stuff to ask you about. Wasted it talking about hair down plug holes. I regret it now.
But to be fair, that the only person whose fault that is in this room is you.
Yeah, but...
It's yours. Your fault.
To be fair, I think it opened us up to it opened a new relationship between us and the audience.
I know that you want to knit that together.
You were in a very famous sketch show, which was called We Know Where You Live. How was that?
That was my Second sketch show.
Yeah, what was your first one?
When I first moved to London, Joe Brand was doing a sketch show, and I did all the little extra characters and different voices in the background. And then from that, I got We Know Where You Live.
Which had a pretty impressive cast.
Yeah, there was...
Do you remember who was in We Know? Can you name everyone who was in We Know
Where You Live? Not everyone. But I can name Sanjeev Bhaskar.
Yes.
Simon Pegg.
Yeah, pretty good.
Amanda Holden.
Correct.
Myself.
Correct, you were in it.
And two others.
One of them was the son of the bloke in Yes Minister.
Basil Brush. Who
oh,
did
yes.
Basil
yeah,
Brush?
Thought, yeah.
It's true.
Yeah.
And he talked
She said to me before, I'm not going to say anything you'll need to cut out. And then she's just stopping herself saying something about...
Basil Brush.
Yeah,
I did that. And the funniest thing in that sketch show was a critic who wrote in the telly page, he said, "We know where you live. What are they going to do? Come round to my house and make me laugh." Which actually, I thought was one of the funniest things.
It's weird.
Isn't it?
There were so many. I mean, it's weird. Simon Pegg has been in quite a few of those sketch shows before he broke through.
Yes.
He was in another one with Sally, funny enough, wasn't he? Sort of Six Pairs of Pants, which we talked to him about, see if he could remember who all the people in that were. And there was a lot in the 90s. There was a lot of these group shows where people were put together. Mm. And that feels like a group of people put together by someone going, we want them. And I guess you hadn't met any of the people before.
No, I didn't know any of them because I was the only northerner and I'd only sort of just moved to London, really. But it was loads of fun and I just got the bug then. I just loved that. And then I got called in to Smack the Pony.
Ella Kenyon was the other person.
Ella. Lovely Ella, yes. So I got called in to that, and that was just great fun. I had so much fun.
Yeah. And Smack the Pony, let's talk about it in our remaining 3 minutes left of the podcast. It was a pretty amazing thing to happen. I mean, it feels like now female-led comedy might become like a big thing. At the time in the 90s, this was sort of maybe was inspired by the Spice Girls by some executive, but it felt like this, wow, we're finally going to have the sketch.
Yeah, it wasn't
show.
Anything to do with Spice Girls.
No.
It was people wanting to do, just to see more women on TV. Because, you know, you were often in the background of some guy's sketch show, mainly.
Yeah.
So I think that people were getting a bit fed up of that, a little bit bored of that, wanted to change that. And... they looked around, you know, to see who was out there doing a bit of comedy, who do they like, and they brought us all in. And I mean, I was asked this recently, you know, did you know that this was going to be something quite special? And I absolutely knew straight away. In fact, because Victoria Powell say, Fiona was the more confident one out of all of them going, this is going to be good.
Yeah.
I know it's going to be good. And it was, and I think I'm really, really proud of it. And, you know, it was amazing. I remember I came up with a character, a bullfighter, and I said, I need a bull, like a real bull. And they were like, okay, we'll get you a bull. And then I came in to work one day and they went, we've got the bull. And they said, gave me a picture and I was like, I was so excited. And I got the picture and I was like, oh, it's brown. Can't have that bull. I can't have that bull, it needs to be black. And they went, oh, really? And then they went to get a black bull. I mean, that's the lengths they went to.
Yeah.
But it had to be done properly, do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Because I was a matador, and they got a suit of lights, flew it in from Madrid, and the costume designer put a fig in sparkles there, which I didn't notice until day two. and this matador had fallen in love with this bull and felt like she just couldn't kill it, so she ran away to Wigan. And she brought the bull with her. And so it was all shot letterbox. It was really lovely. And I had to film with this bull. But it was amazing because, you know, the things that we did, the things that we talked about, and it was just us being silly. It wasn't just about, you know, female comics. I'd hope that guys could like
what
that.
What I like about it, and looking again at it, and what I liked about it at the time, but looking back on it, is that there's a lot of just weird sketches in it, and there are ones that...
Some quite surreal stuff.
I found a little funny clip of all the makeup ones, which are all, like, oh, that's what it's like being a woman, but you still enjoy them as a man because they're a little view into the world. And even that one where the quite famous one, I think, with the lipstick at the party, where the lipstick gets bigger and bigger around the party. It's sort of as someone kisses someone else. It's a very good sketch, but it's more surreal than anything. That's not about being a woman. I mean, it is obliquely about being a woman because it's about having lipstick. But it's the silliness, I think, of a lot of it that was enjoyable, and the inventiveness. It felt like a home for people who were doing sort of non-trad sketches, if you see what I mean. Compared to, say, those other sketch shows that didn't fly, that were trying to be like The Far Show or trying to be like something else.
But what we did was actually quite difficult, because what we made a conscious decision not to do a catchphrase and not to do repetitive characters, because, you know, it's easier to do that. I annoy people by saying this, but it's easier to do that because you can film in the same costume all day, you know that. You could be in the same location, which is cheaper. You've got a catchphrase, which means you don't have to rewrite. And we did do the opposite of all of that, which made it really, really difficult. You know, really difficult, because, you know, nothing stayed the same. And we were on the move a lot, and, you know, the turnover was huge. And I still stand by that. And comics that do catchphrases don't particularly like it, but I stand by that, and that to me is a funny sketch show. And I thoroughly enjoyed it, and I think I still think it's got legs. I mean, the thing is, it's on all the time, isn't it?
So so there's always the talk. I mean, you've done some specials. You did a comic relief thing a couple of years ago where you all went together again. There's always sort of the talk about coming back together.
Well, we are knocking around ideas. We've been knocking around ideas for the last 5 or 6 years, and then we'll get to the end of it and go, oh, I don't want that, or let's do this, or we're looking at narrative. But we are actually talking about doing stuff. So, you know, we want to do stuff together, as well as do our own thing.
So is it a possibility still? It still could happen, because it was recently said it wasn't going to happen, or it had been turned down, or
no. I think what it was, they wanted to do us to do something, but not in a sketch form.
Right,
that's the difference. And I'm still really childish and still like sketches, which is really annoying.
I also think it would be, and in the old days, it used to be like for older people to do, you know, people who aren't in their 20s, by older people, which includes all of us, you know, that's the two Ronnies were doing sketches until they died, basically. And Dick Emery was doing these sketches when he was old. It's now like seen as a young person's thing, and then you do it and you move on to something else. But actually, I think the same as with stand-up. Funny is funny, and I don't think
it doesn't matter how old you are. You know, we've all got friends who are older and younger. You know, I've got a friend, you know, when I moved out of London to Bray, it's completely full of these characters, and one of my friends is something like, I think she's 75. She absolutely has me in stitches, you know.
Yeah.
And she's as funny as my mate who's 35. Sure. I mean, to me, I don't care about age.
No.
And I don't think it matters at all.
And people, I mean, and I think with a sketch show, there's only a few that come along that people remember as fondly as, you know, there's one a decade sort of thing, isn't there? Or one every 5 years where some people remember it. I think people would want to see the three of you, especially, and there's more than three really, isn't there? But there's the three main people in it. You're all very extremely talented people. It'd be great to see what you would come up with now. So I hope they do.
Well, we're working on something. Yeah. So I mean, it just sounds pathetic me not saying anything, because it's just it's only in the beginnings. This new idea is really right at the beginning. Yeah. So we'll shout about it if it moves forward.
Yeah, that's good. There's lots of younger people coming through now, but I think it's interesting that
I think there's room for everyone.
Yeah, I think there
actually.
Is room.
And because everyone's got many different tastes, right?
Only people over 50 watch TV now, so...
Well, do you know, my son has never watched TV.
Exactly, so...
Everything's on a tablet or a... He thinks it's really old-fashioned. You know, I like tellies. I'm guessing people in here like tellies. We like big, flat-screen tellies, right?
They don't like podcasts, that's what I can tell you.
And...
But I mean, the other ones out there.
He doesn't understand it.
No.
He genuinely thinks it's a really... Because why have you got a telly? And I'm going, but I feel like... You know those people that still like vinyl... I feel a bit like that.
Yeah.
Because he goes, why are you watching tellies? It's just odd.
Yeah. I like tellies. It's over. It's over. But not for our generation. Our generation will carry on watching it. And we're going to live for, you know...
I'm going to do it on principle.
Yeah.
I'm going to get a bigger one.
Yeah.
Because
they're good.
Because.
But a telly is good, isn't it?
Yeah.
Well, we've got not very much longer. We'll do another. We've got a couple more questions. I was loads of... loads of stuff you've done as well, and lots of acting, and Fat Slags, I wanted to talk to you. You're in the Fat Slags cartoon.
Oh, yes. If you're anybody read Viz. Yeah.
Who remembers Viz? I mean, it's still going. Anyone still? Yeah. And well, you've portrayed, is it Tracy or Sandra? Is it Tracy? Do you remember?
I was Sandra.
Yeah.
I was the one with the red dog poo hairdo. And we had to kind of wear a huge, big fat suit and run around Bond Street. And it was so much fun. I laughed and laughed and laughed. I couldn't believe I was getting paid for doing that. It was just so, it was hilarious. In a shell suit. Running up and down Bond Street. We had Naomi Campbell in it. And of course, there's people kind of go, like, looking, not quite sure. I really had a fat suit. I mean, I didn't do very well that film because it was American money.
Was it?
I think they didn't understand that kind of humour.
Yeah.
And they'd taken out a lot of the jokes. Right. I mean, this is nothing to do with me. This is to do with the director and the whatever. But I think, you know, Ed Bai did a good job.
Yeah.
Really, and I loved it.
Yeah, it's a lot of British films. It's very rare again for a British film to break through, isn't it?
Yeah,
and so there's all of these.
It wasn't nearly going to.
No, but there's but there's so many. Every time I interview anyone who's an actor or gone into those comedy films, they'll have 10 or 15. You know, they'll have 5 films on their CV that I've never heard of that have come up. There's all these British films being made. I've even got a couple and I don't really do much acting. There's all these British films that come up and either disappear or it's quite interesting, isn't it? You did a Smack the Pony cast one with it about the sort of female gladiators.
Yeah, we did. We were set in 55 BC,
yeah,
called Gladiatress, and I remember the producer saying, you know, he wanted us all to kind of look quite cute and everything. And I was doing a little bit of research and I found out that in 55 BC, women used to fight alongside the men. And I found this fantastic drawing of, and this woman had a shaved head.
Right.
And like fake hair and a tattoo and, you know, painted on. It was mad, the face. And the producer went, don't you dare. Just don't you dare. And I thought, oh, I've got to. So I shaved my head and got the fake tattoo on and did the thing. And it was the scariest looking face. It was brilliant. I mean, again, that didn't do great, that movie.
It's because of the tattoo. You should stay looking like that.
But again, I had a lot of fun doing it.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yeah. It's interesting that you don't know. Well, you did know with Smack the Pony before it started. Sometimes you get a feeling that something's going to be. But there's so many people involved in the success. You know, there's lots of those films, you watch them and they're great. Or there's something. I think, say, for example, the League of Gentlemen film is really great. But that didn't really even break through. You know, that, and even with the League of Gentlemen pedigree.
No, you're absolutely right. There's loads and loads of stuff out there that you'll just. They get made, but you never see the light of day.
It's crazy with films. With films more than anything, because with TV, I think people see it.
Yeah.
It's on and people see it. But if it's a film and you don't choose to go and see it, it's not
awkward.
On in cinemas. Yeah, but you know, but they've got, there's so many people's jobs involved, isn't it? You could do a fantastic job doing your particular part of it, but if someone else screws up or if something else goes wrong or it's edited badly or if it's not promoted properly, then that's the end of it. It's a sort of bizarre thing.
Yeah.
That the thing with the most money behind it is the one that things disappear from, you know.
Yeah. I don't know. They keep making them.
They do. I'm very happy to be in one if anyone wants to offer me a part, despite my rudeness. Well, look, I think we're going to have to wrap it up because there's another comedian coming on into this venue, and I hope everyone could hear the Royal Philharmonic Orchestra playing in the background for me. It was nice of them to turn up to play just sort of annoyingly. In the background.
I know, it's a little bit odd, isn't it?
There's just someone dicking around on a piano now. He's not in any orchestra.
It's kind of nice.
Yeah.
Just odd timing.
Yeah. Oh, it's gone quiet now. Now they shut up. Now we're about to finish.
Yeah, bye. See ya.
It's been so lovely to talk to you, and thank you for coming on to the podcast.
Thank you very much.
People look out for you. You'll be sort of touring comedy clubs and maybe doing Edinburgh 2020.
Yeah, right,
so
hopefully.
Look out for that. And thank you very much, ladies and gentlemen, Fiona Allen. I love you, Henley. You have been listening to Rahalastapa with me, Richard Herring, and my guest, Fiona Allen. Thank you to Pest for providing the music for these credits. I'd like to thank everyone at the Henley Festival, everyone at Go Faster Stripe, especially Chris Evans, not that one, everyone at Acast for all your hard work. I'm indebted to my producer, Ben Walker. This is a Fuzz, Go Faster Stripe, and Sky Potato production. Go to rahulastapa.co.uk to find out more about this podcast. Become a member and get loads of cool extras and a badge and lots of other stuff as well. It's like the Dennis the Menace fan club now, my fan friends. See ya!
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house, with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Thanks very much for listening to the podcast. Go to GoFasterStripe.com for fantastic downloads and books and to join the Go Faster Stripe Club and get loads of stuff from really interesting comedians. Help little Chris Evans knock that one out. That would be lovely. All right, RichardHerring.com for all my gigs. Hope to see you at a gig. Come and say hi after if you've enjoyed these podcasts. Don't come if you haven't enjoyed them and say you haven't enjoyed them. It'll make me feel sad.